I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest, Dr. Friedemann Schwab, is a physician specializing in cardiology and molecular biology who has helped thousands of people with his personal breakthrough and empowerment program that combines his medical expertise with NLP, timeline therapy, clinical hypnosis, and more. His book, The Fear and Anxiety Solution, A Breakthrough Process for Healing and Empowerment with Your Subconscious Mind, was published in 2012. He lives in Seattle, Washington, and more information is available at www.cellularwisdom.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Schwab, and I look forward to hearing about fear and anxiety. Now, first, you went from being a physician practicing cardiology to being more of a therapist, helping people with fear and anxiety. Can you tell us how that happened?
Well, it was certainly an interesting story, but first of all, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be on your show. The story is really an unfoldment of realizing that I became more and more interested in helping people not just heal the symptoms, but really address the root causes of their illnesses or preventing illnesses from happening. And when I was in cardiology, certainly very often I saw people either before they had their, cardiac episodes being very stressed or anxious, or at least afterwards, which certainly didn't help their recovery and it didn't help their longevity. But we didn't really have any insights or also any tools or means to help people in a more psychological way. So I always felt that we are, really good in focusing on the organs, but we are not really good at focusing on the entire human being. And that was one of the reasons why I wanted to also leave medicine, because it felt to me that we have to start seeing the mind and the body more as connected and really working together rather as separate entities. I made a step in between going into basic research and becoming a molecular biologist, focusing on cells and what they are actually doing on a literally genetic and molecular level. And there I just was blown away. I mean, I didn't learn this in medical school, that we have so much potential inside. Mm-hmm. I thought, wow, this is amazing. If I would have known this. So if we have so much potential and every cell can really change and adapt and heal in ways that, researchers still scratch their heads every day and wonder, how is this cell doing it? We have no idea. Then how come that we are not tapping more into this potential? How come that we are not able to really, trust ourselves more and are more steeped in fear and anxiety and insecurity than really having confidence? Mm-hmm. And this is how I got into, working with the mind. And I'm talking more about the deeper part of the mind, the subconscious mind, which connects our emotions, our memories, our beliefs, also with our body. Something that I feel is really at the heart of health and healing. And so I studied extensively how to be able to work with the subconscious mind. And then over the years, focused more and more on fear and anxiety, because I feel fear and anxiety is an epidemic, and it is one of the major sources of illnesses, and it's certainly something we have to learn to understand and then learn how to heal.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. And what I was amazed to hear in the last year was that even our thoughts influence our DNA, because, I was taught years ago that the DNA, everything is set, it's not changeable. But now the whole field of epigenetics was something new to me, and I thought that was very exciting.
I think that's a very important field, because often we are using genes as an excuse. Well, I have a gene to be overweight. Sorry, I can't really change anything. And we are not really seeing that, yeah, genes are kind of the framework. They're certainly, you know, a fundamental aspect of who we are, but anyone, you know, who reads Bruce Lipton's book knows that genes are very much integrated with the environment. And in fact, I mean, he showed that genes are not even necessary for cells to really function, you know, in a way that they can continue to live and to, you know, to react. So I wouldn't say genes are overrated, but I think genes need to be seen in the context of the whole being, and there certainly the environment and the influence and the genes are something that research will still need to explore, but it's very exciting, this whole epigenetic field.
Right. Then, Dr. Swab, why do you believe that using medications for stress and anxiety keep us from reaching our full potential?
Well, you know, first of all, taking medication is not something I'm against. You know, sometimes people misunderstand this. There are many circumstances where, especially when people are really struggling with anxiety, are so overwhelmed by those emotions that they cannot really find rest. They cannot have a clear thought. They cannot really work on themselves. So just to give them a reprieve and to feel like, well, you know, let's just get you out of this fight and flight mode, medication can be very, very helpful. However, it's not the solution. You know, medication is covering up the symptom, and it doesn't really go to the root cause. You know, just like you wouldn't give someone who has a broken appendix just, you know, some Advil and say, well, take that, it's going to fix it. No, you have to go to the appendix. You have to go to the root of the pain. And in some ways, fear and anxiety are, you know, emotional pains that we have to understand where they are coming from and how to address them. And then we can actually really heal this. Now, what I mean with the full potential is that in so many ways, fear and anxiety is potential that we haven't really tapped into. How many people know that the insecurity that they have, the anxiety that makes them rather avoid and hide out, or that, you know, that feeling of worry that makes them please other people rather than really taking care of themselves, that this is actually holding them back from really exploring, who am I, what can I do, and they are not really expressing who they are, so they are not even, you know, investigating what's inside of me, what is my true potential. And so when you are resolving fear and anxiety, automatically you do have access to more of yourself because you know more about yourself, and you're also more willing to express more of yourself.
And what is the first step that one should take to get relief when they're suffering from fear and anxiety?
Well, I think there is, you know, a lot we can do to find relief from fear and anxiety. And you know, many people know, well, meditation can help. Many people explore, for example, hypnotherapy, or they feel like, hey, when I'm really stressed out, I'm going to go for a brisk walk or going to the gym. So these are ways for us to be able to deal with fear and anxiety. And that, unfortunately, isn't enough, because fear and anxiety isn't about something that we need to deal with. It's something we need to decipher, we need to understand, and we need to utilize. So for me, the first step is actually to understand your fear and anxiety, to really understand, well, I'm creating these emotions, and I'm going to find a way to uncreate them. But there is a reason why I have these emotions, and there are usually three reasons that I, you know, focus on and address. And one of the reasons is that we tend to stuff in our emotions. We all do that. You know, we go to work, our boss looks at us with a frown, we get a little, you know, stressed out about it, but, you know, we cannot release it. We cannot throw a book or something. We just have to smile and suck it up, and those emotions get transferred into your emotional storage place inside. You go home, maybe your spouse is mad at you because you forgot once again to bring home the cereal. Again, you don't express the emotion because you want to keep the peace. You stuff it inside. So we are all burdened with a lot of emotional baggage that basically is piling up like a pressure cooker. And at some point, we are ready to explode. Now, if you have for years, maybe since you were a child, piled up fear and anxiety, the threshold to feel those emotions is much lower. And the older you get, the more you get scared. You know, at some point, you cannot fly again. At some point, you don't want to get out again. Your comfort zone gets smaller. All of those things have to do with the emotional baggage that you carry around. And that's one of the major root causes that we need to address. And then there's, of course, also how we believe the world is. You know, when you believe that the world is a bad place and that you are not really capable to be in it, well, that is a very scary belief. But these beliefs we're not even really aware of often. They are there. They are filtering the way, you know, we are believing. So, you know, even though you may feel that, well, I don't really have limiting beliefs, I just know that I'm going to fail again, you're setting yourself up for more fear and anxiety to get stored inside of you because you're not seeing your successes. You're not seeing when people are saying good job, doesn't fit into your belief. All you're seeing is when you have a failure, come late to work, spill some milk. All of those things create just more that heaviness of fear and anxiety. So there are these root causes that need to be understood when you do, and you actually have a proactive leverage on changing them. And that's what I'm teaching in my courses, in my individual sessions, and also in the book, The Fear and Anxiety Solution.
And I guess we should try to differentiate between fear and anxiety. So can you tell us how they are different?
Well, I don't, actually.
Oh, you don't?
Maybe I'm lazy, but I found out that even though textbooks do differentiate, in the end, it doesn't really matter for two reasons. One is that people are, when they express fear or anxiety, not saying, I read in a textbook, this is supposed to be anxiety, so now I'm calling it anxiety. They call it whatever the name is that they are choosing. So when people call, you know, for example, being afraid of going into a plane as, well, I'm anxious, and then another person says exactly the same thing, I'm afraid of going to a plane, but they call it fear. So you see, it's really just a personal preference. It doesn't really define necessarily, you know, the emotion. And the reason why I don't differentiate is that they come from the same place. They have the same subconscious root causes, and they can be resolved in the same way. But in general, you know, there is certainly the one is more about the uncertainty, you know, this where you don't really know what you can expect. And the other one is more specific. It's more something about, you know, meeting new people or failing when you have a test or being in front of a crowd and holding a talk. So one is certainly, you know, more a specific fear, and the other one is more the overall anxiety of the unknown.
And Dr. Schaub, is it ever helpful to have fear and anxiety?
Well, I think fear and anxiety are absolutely normal. They are a part of our human psyche. It's like saying, is it helpful to be hungry? Well, of course it's helpful because it tells you something. Eat a toast. And if you are, you know, having fear and anxiety, it tells you something. It's a message. The problem is when it takes over because we are misinterpreting the message. You know, where we are making the outer circumstances as our enemies, and we are saying, oh, I'm afraid because, you know, maybe there is a what-if thought, you know, maybe I get fired, or maybe, you know, I'm going to get sick. I mean, these fears or anxieties that can be all-consuming. So we don't necessarily interpret these fears and anxieties as, okay, this is a message, it has a meaning. What does it mean? What can we do about it? We are getting, you know, overwhelmed and made feel powerless by these emotions. And that's certainly not helpful. Mm-hmm. But in general, I think we have to honor and learn to read and understand our emotions better and not just push them away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what is the anxiety-driven self-talk that you write about, and how do we transform this?
Well, the self-talk that is anxiety-driven, most of you that know anxiety and know these little scary thoughts that are popping up out of nowhere, we don't seem to choose them intellectually. You know, we're not waking up in the morning and saying, oh my God, you know, I'm feeling like I'm, you know, going to my own execution. It's just there. You know, there's just like something that comes from deep within. And so these are thoughts that often come at the most inopportune moments. You're supposed to give a presentation at work, and all you can think about is, what if I don't remember what to say? What if I'm blanking out? What if? These thoughts are certainly not helpful, but they are popping up. Mm-hmm. And they come from the subconscious, not to torture you, not to make you feel bad, but ultimately to protect you. Ultimately, somehow to keep you safe, safe from embarrassment, safe from disappointment, safe from the judgment of others, whatever the reasons are. And when you do have a negative thought, it's important to not forget that there is an inner protector inside of you that just has your safety and well-being in mind. Mm-hmm. So if you imagine this inner protector and all you would say is, I don't really care what you're saying, or you would just, you know, get mad at this inner protector, or you ignore the inner protector, or you buy into the, you know, fear of the inner protector, nothing of this really makes it calmer or makes this, you know, thought go away. The best way to deal with negative anxiety-triggering thoughts is to counterbalance them. Mm-hmm. Now, counterbalancing doesn't mean like you're creating your own inner debating club. Counterbalancing really means that you are looking at the thought as if it would come from a smaller version of yourself, like a child. Mm-hmm. And then you're actually starting to counter this thought as if you're talking to a child. And the reason why I'm saying this is because if you are speaking more from the heart, you know, if you're really not just counterbalancing because it sounds good, but you're actually counterbalancing because you want to have, you know, a sense of compassion, a sense of caring in your counterbalancing thoughts, then you're actually reaching the deeper parts of your subconscious. Then you're actually creating a whole different energy inside of you. And in my experience, when people follow this little process of counterbalancing as I describe it, usually the negative self-talk goes down by 70 to 80% in just a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. So it's very effective. You just need to learn to speak the language of, you know, that subconscious mind, that inner protector.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. And what role does forgiveness play in transforming our fears and anxieties?
I think forgiveness plays a big role. You know, I talk often about the survival mode that we are in. And what I mean with that is that most people that are suffering from fear and anxiety are living somewhat still in the past, in a survival mode that started way back, often in our childhood. You know, let's say you have been, you know, in a growing up in a not very stable environment. Maybe your father was alcoholic and your mother was, you know, maybe bipolar, and you never really felt safe. And so there was a survival mode kicking in that made you maybe avoid, you know, avoid connection, avoid being seen, rather hiding out. And when you're in that survival mode, you know, even when you're an adult and maybe your parents are long gone, you're still living in the same pattern. You're still having a very, very tight and small comfort zone. You're still not willing to make yourself be visible. And if you're looking back in the past and you realize, well, this is actually a reaction to my upbringing, and then you're feeling like all this resentment and all this anger at your parents for being bad parents or what they didn't do right and how they actually didn't give you what you deserved, it even ties you more to the past. It even keeps you more stuck in it. So what you really eventually need to do is to forgive and let go. And forgiveness doesn't mean that you are residing as a judge over their wrongdoings and say, well, you're guilty, but I let you go. You're actually not focusing on whatever they did, but you're actually realizing, I learned from it. I can grow from the past still. I can still see that I gained actually something inside of me, maybe experiences or insights or maybe more caring about others because of it. And forgiveness is literally to give away. Give away the "you owe me" sheet. Give away the pain that they caused you. Letting go from a place of compassion, from a place of wanting to heal and resolve the past. This is, again, not something we can intellectually talk ourselves through. We often have to go a little bit deeper than that into our hearts. There are processes that are described and help with that. But when you do that, you really feel like you can actually disconnect. You can actually move forward, and you're no longer held back in a smaller role in that survival mode. So, yeah, forgiveness is a wonderful healing process.
Great, good. And you talk about preventing illness and seeming to become younger when you release negative tension. Can you tell us about this?
Isn't that wonderful?
I mean, right.
People spending thousands of dollars in Botox. I mean, what about just letting go of a little, you know, fear and anxiety and actually realizing I'm actually finding the fountain of youth? Well, the reason is that, you know, anxiety and stress creates this, you know, oxidative stress inside of us. So basically what happens is through the release of stress hormones, through our body being constantly in fight and flight, our cells are actually affected by that. And, you know, this has to do with the length of our chromosomes. And so the length of our chromosomes is basically directly affecting, A, how likely we are to have chronic illnesses, including cancer, and how fast we're aging. The shorter the chromosomes, the faster we're aging, and the more, you know, at risk we are for illnesses. The length of the chromosome is determined by an enzyme that's called a telomerase, and that enzyme is basically something that keeps the length of the chromosomes intact. It's like, you know, always adding little pieces to it when they get chopped away. When we have a lot of this stress in ourselves due to fear and anxiety, this enzyme is actually not as active, it's not as potent, and therefore it cannot keep the length of the chromosomes intact, and they are getting smaller and smaller at a rapid rate. And this is why there is a linkage between stress, anxiety, and illnesses, and also aging.
It would make sense then that meditation and some of these things would be very helpful as part of a holistic approach to both prevent and to treat illnesses. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think anything that you feel allows you to really relax. And, you know, this can be meditation, which I think is wonderful if it doesn't aggravate you. I mean, I know people that are trying to meditate and they get actually more frustrated than really relaxed because they think, well, I shouldn't be floating by now and I should have no thoughts and they're coming racing. So it makes things actually worse. But then there are people that, you know, feel like the best meditation is for them doing the dishes. Or, you know, I like personally being in the garden and being in nature and putting my hands in the ground. And, you know, it's not necessarily about the method that brings you in touch with yourself, that brings you into a place of inner peace. It's just doing it consistently, not just like the 2 weeks of vacation in the summer, but really trying to find every day a moment where you actually let go of the external world and somehow connect to yourself. You know, when you're planting a plant, you connect to yourself as the creator. when you are cleaning up something, really just in a very calm and centered way, you are connecting to yourself as a steward of your environment. When you're petting a cat, you're connecting to your gentleness, to your kindness. There are many ways to connect, but it's ultimately disconnecting from the obligations and the hustle and bustle. But what do? We watch some CSI show at 10 o'clock at night, and then we, for good measures, add a little bit the news onto it right before we go to bed. And how can our nervous system ever really relax this way? It can't. Mm-hmm. And this is part of the reason why our anxiety becomes, you know, a really epidemic these days.
Mm-hmm. And it would seem like nutrition would be an important part of this then, because now people talk about the anti-inflammatory fish oil, and they talk about antioxidants in the food, et cetera, et cetera. So it would seem like nutrition would be another important aspect of prevention. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And, you know, I don't think that we have to necessarily go overboard and, you know, really limiting ourselves of everything. And again, unfortunately, every topic leads to its extremes, you know, where people say, you know, I can only eat raw, or I can only eat vegan, or I can only do this, and that's the only way. And whenever we go into the only way, we are limiting ourselves. We have to find out for ourselves what is actually the right thing for our system. And we do have an inner GPS. We do have actually an incredible wisdom in every of our cells that can tell us what feels right and what doesn't feel right, that tells us when we are in harmony and when we are not in harmony. And people that force themselves to a certain diet but actually ignore that they may actually not enjoy what they're eating, or ignore that they, you know, may have less and less energy, but it's the right diet, what the book says, they don't listen to themselves. And I think that's, you know, what I feel we have to do more and more to become our own authority. We have to educate ourselves. You know, sometimes we don't have all the information we need, but then put it together in a way that you are feeling whole, and not do just something because somebody says this is what you need to do, because we are not cookies and there is no cookie cutter approach. There is really just you finding your way to create the most harmonious and whole way of existing here.
Great. And Dr. Schaub, would you then take us through a brief exercise for relief of anxiety?
Yeah, of course. You know, and this is always, I think, something that we have to realize, that when we do start working on fear and anxiety on a deeper level, it is not something that we can take lightly. You know, this is the journey to healing fear and anxiety is a journey that starts with the recognition of what is actually creating this anxiety and where does it come from. And in some ways, you have to continue with this journey because, you know, once you go on it, your subconscious demands the resolution. It's a little bit like, well, I'm going to open, you know, the Pandora's box of the past, and if I'm not really emptying it, well, now it's open, now it's there, so you better do something about it. So the reason why I'm saying this is because sometimes people say, oh, yeah, there is a method, there is like one fix, there is one tool, that's going to make all the difference. And I found that not very helpful because I think it's not really a tool that makes a difference. It's a journey to find yourself that makes a difference. And the journey to find yourself, one of the best guides that I have found personally on my own journey is the anxiety. Because without the anxiety, I would have not necessarily looked inside to find out who I am. I had my beautiful external identifications, but I didn't really ask myself, so who am I if I'm not a doctor, or if I'm not, you know, having this car or this pair of shoes or whatever I was identifying myself with. So having said this all, one of the things that I find is very helpful for fear and anxiety is a very simple but very effective breathing technique that I learned in Kundalini Yoga, which was one of the yoga and meditation teachings that really brought me on the path of helping people the way I am working right now. And so it's very simple. All you need to do is just close your eyes, ideally sit in a chair and or maybe on the side of your bed or in your car, but stop driving before you close your eyes, and then have your eyes a little bit rolled up, just a little bit, so that you're looking kind of this point between your eyebrows. Then allow yourself to gently take a deep breath in, and then exhale. And then inhale with a count on five. One, two, three, four, five. Hold the breath for five, four, three, two, one, and exhale. One, two, three, four, five. And just go through this process. Inhaling, holding, exhaling. Let's do this for a few moments. Always keeping the same length. And as you do this, you will notice that your mind actually adjusts to the rhythm of your breath. Just as when we are anxious, we are actually breathing faster and more shallow, so the breath follows our emotions. When we are breathing slower and more deliberate, our mind follows our breath. Our emotions become calmer and more centered. And when you do this, you feel like starting to reboot inside. You are taking charge. You are actually starting to signal to your mind, I'm not going into this fight and flight spiral. I'm actually staying focused on this moment, on my breathing, that what I can control. And as you're doing this, I want you just to imagine for a moment that you can gauge into yourself and notice which of the breath cycle parts is harder for you. Is it the inhale? Is it the holding? Is it the exhale? And you can actually learn a lot about yourself by recognizing when you do inhale and you have a hard time inhaling, that you may have a hard time receiving. Or when you have a hard time holding the breath, maybe maintaining something or keeping something inside is hard for you. And when it's difficult for you to exhale and you just want to get rid of it as fast as possible, there may be also for you an issue with letting go. Just this in itself gives you already insights about yourself. And if you are practicing this and you can easily do this 5-second cycle, then you can increase to 6, 7, up to 20 seconds per cycle. 20 seconds inhaling, 20 seconds holding, 20 seconds exhaling. It may take you a few months to get there, but doing this breathing can change your life because it can actually signal instantaneously just by starting the breath to your mind that now you're safe and now it's, you know, basically you who is taking control again over your emotions. It's you who is taking care of your mind, and there is nothing to worry, nothing to be afraid of. So it's a wonderful way to really start the day and to the end the day, and it's certainly something that has personally helped me a lot.
And I learned something about me from that.
What is that? What did you learn?
I have more difficulty inhaling than I do holding and exhaling. And I think that's a problem for many of us.
Yeah, well, it is interesting, really. And it plays also a role in that survival mode that I was talking about where, you know, when we are in the survival mode, there are basically four different patterns people fall into. And one is the avoidance pattern, And people that are avoiding, they are really so contracted. They are often so small that you have a hard time with letting go. Mm-hmm. And people mm-hmm. that are, the second pattern is pleasing. People mm-hmm. that are mm-hmm. pleasing in order to be safe, they have a really, really hard time to receive. Mm-hmm. They are the ones that are much more giving and, providing to others. And so you can see in those patterns. And then there is, of course, the controller, the people that want to every circumstance in their control, and they often also rule with anger and frustration. Those people often have a hard time to let go. So it's mm-hmm. a really interesting way also to observe and get information about what are my survival patterns that started way back, mm-hmm. and how can I learn about them just by watching my breath.
Now, I wonder if people go into certain professions because they have some of these characteristics. Like being a nurse, it makes sense that you want to please and you want to help. Being
Absolutely.
A politician, you'd want
yeah.
something completely different.
Very much so. And then they are the fourth pattern is the achiever, the overachiever. And the overachiever is the pattern basically where you just want to always be the best. You mm-hmm. always mm-hmm. want to be mm-hmm. the one who is basically getting recognition for being on top and, being the one who has, again, reached another promotion or, made another, $1 million and has another new car. And so they're also people that they need adoration and admiration. And those people they take in very easily. But they also have a really hard time to let go because they have a hard time to really be themselves. They identify themselves with their accomplishments mm-hmm. and don't really identify themselves with their more maybe vulnerable or sensitive aspects.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Shope, I know we could talk all day. You are very interesting. But I also know that you have another appointment. So at this point, could you tell us about your books and services and products and how the listeners could reach you?
Yeah, so the best way to get more information is to go to the website, thefearandanxietysolution.com. It's in one word, thefearandanxietysolution.com. This is also where you can read some excerpts on the book and listen to some of my empowerment radio shows, look at some videos, get some tools already in hand to get started with overcoming and healing your fear and anxiety. I do offer individual sessions with clients. I work with people all over the world via Skype and also the phone. So no matter where you are, you certainly can work on yourself and really learn more about yourself through the teacher that is fear and anxiety. And I also offer a 3-month webinar that will actually start in the spring, and there will be more information about that on the website. But that may be also something that you're interested in, which is basically breaking through fear and anxiety in 95 days. Mm-hmm. So lots of possibilities to start working on yourself.
Great. And if someone was interested in reaching you for private Skype consultation, would they then go through your website and they can reach you that
yeah,
way?
Yeah, that's the easiest. Mm-hmm. I offer actually free consultations. Obviously, if you have any questions or you want to find out more about what specifically I'm doing, and the mm-hmm. website mm-hmm. still left some questions open, you can actually just go to the website and fill out the schedule a mm-hmm. free phone consultation form, mm-hmm. and then you can, we'll get in touch with you.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I appreciate this very much, Dr. Shope. I have not had anyone talk about fear and anxiety before, and it's so prevalent in all of us that it seemed like it was going to be a good idea, especially since you had ways to deal with it. And so, I mean, there's so many people in the world that want to create fear and anxiety in others, but, so it's great for people to have something they can do when, this happens. So I really appreciate
Absolutely.
This very much, and I hope that when your next book comes out, we can talk again.
anytime. And it's such a big topic, fear and anxiety. I think it's, you know, unfortunately also one of the most misunderstood human conditions. Often I think it's just pushed in the corner as a disorder and an illness. And this way, I think, made really wrong, because fear and anxiety is an opportunity, is a way for us to learn more about ourselves and also to make adjustments in our life that actually ultimately create greater fulfillment. So don't ignore your fear and anxiety. Try to learn from it.
Great. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It was wonderful talking with you.
And you too. My second guest, Terry J., is an internationally acclaimed medium, intuitive, pet psychic, horse whisperer, energy healer, and more. She is also known as a medical and veterinarian intuitive. She regularly communicates with both people and pets on the other side, particularly when helping people deal with the loss of a loved one. She also has the unique ability to communicate with people who have communication disorders such as autism, Alzheimer's, traumatic brain injuries, coma, and other chronic and terminal diseases. Terry's love of horses has always figured strongly in her vocations. A native of Cleveland, Ohio, she was drawn to horses at an early age, began riding lessons, and by age 16, she was showing horses on a Class A circuit as a junior rider and riding teacher locally. She attended Ohio State University, where she studied animal science, and by the mid-1970s, she had moved to Las Vegas, where she started a free horseback therapy program for disabled children. In 1985, she moved to Reno to become the first executive director of the Nevada Commission for the Preservation of Wild Horses, a position she held until 1990, when she decided once again to offer a horseback therapy program. It was during this time that she discovered her gift for intuitive communication with disabled children that soon grew to include horses, other animals, and the deceased. Terry has always been in the front of the media spotlight for her therapeutic riding program, which received local and national coverage. She went on to appear on countless television shows for her intuitive work in national and international magazines and newspapers and on TV series Texas Justice as an expert witness. She recently appeared on the Steve Harvey Show. She will be playing herself in a feature-length movie coming out later this year. Because of the length of the interview, we will discuss energy and medical intuitive work this week, and on the next show, discuss energy healing, who can do it, and some miracles she has seen while using it. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Terry, and I want to hear your views on healing with energy. Now, what do you mean by medical intuition?
I'm able to talk to someone, even over the phone, and determine what is wrong with them physically, especially if physicians have not been able to determine the cause. And then even more importantly, I'm able to figure out what energy or stuck negative emotion has caused the illness or disease. Mm-hmm. I really believe that all illness, injury, and disease is caused by stuck negative emotions. I joke and call it issues in the tissues. And I know that if people can release the stuck negative emotions, if they haven't waited too long, that they can heal whatever is the cause of their illness, even if it's something serious like cancer.
So you believe then that the cause of disease is stuck energy?
Stuck negative emotions, you bet.
I'd have to think about that, because that seems so... Well, energy is such a broad concept, though, that I guess it could be. I'll have to think about that more, Terry.
Yeah. Well, you know, my job isn't to convince people mm-hmm. of the truth of this. Mm-hmm. It's to share the information, mm-hmm. provide them with energy healing modalities, and to let them try to see if it works for them. I mean, it certainly couldn't hurt.
Right, right, right.
But I've seen so many miracles happen even you know, with my clients and even with a family member. My sister was actually diagnosed with lymphoma and only given 6 months to live. And this was years and years ago, and I was not doing energy healing at the
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent her to an energy healer in San Diego, and she had one session with him and came home, had a scan 2 weeks later, and her physician called her and said, you know, what the hell did you do? It's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd never seen anyone with such advanced lymphoma just turn around and not have it anymore.
Mm-hmm. I
and
guess...
I see it with...
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I guess I'm thinking back of my energy theory, and I saw things like nutrition, air, conversations, all kinds of things as energy, but I talked about them as excess and deprivation or balanced energy. And so I guess if energy was off balanced, it could be negative energy. And so from that point of view, theoretically, I could transpose all of the work that I did on the concept of energy as a theory for nursing into your theory that all disease is a result of negative energy and can be dealt with by energy and make sense out of it. And I think...
Absolutely. We're saying the same thing.
Uh-huh. Right.
But I think
right.
A lot of people really get into what they're eating and, you know, mm-hmm. nutrition mm-hmm. and diet and mm-hmm. exercise,
mm-hmm.
and they think that is going to keep them safe.
Mm-hmm.
They think that, is, and just that, is going to keep them disease-free. And I have found that not to be so,
mm-hmm.
because I know lots of vegans and vegetarians that get cancer.
Right, right.
And so the problem there is the fact that they haven't dealt with their stuck negative emotions. And in a lot of cases, people don't realize that you can go all the way back in your childhood to infancy and toddlerhood and find trauma. You know, sexual abuse victims are going to have issues in the second and third chakra. They can have fibroids, uterine cancer, cervical cancer, bladder problems. All of the people with large intestine problems, those are all going to be attributed to childhood issues.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But
right.
most people just think, well, you just suck it up and move on.
Right.
Well, if you've just stuffed it away, then it's just sitting there like a time bomb within you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier that I had consulted a healer in California who dealt also with the emotional and was picking up traumatic periods in my life and dealing with that. But she also then saw imbalances, and so that again would be energy. And so
absolutely.
One thing that she recommended was that I take something called taurine for my heart condition. And
uh-huh.
so I've been taking that. She also recommended zinc, more zinc, that would help to make something else that was important for kidney function. So she was doing kind of a combination. So it all, again, went back to energy. So it makes sense.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great.
I just think, well, I think people are really missing the boat by believing that they can eat right and exercise
mm-hmm.
and they're not going to ever have disease. And that it's just not true.
Right.
Especially when we have, you know, hidden things, things that are hidden way back in our childhood that we don't have any conscious memory of. And we have to dig through those things and really find out what those things were that caused so much trauma, and then through energy healing techniques, be able to release them. Here's the thing. There's lots of places that'll say, oh, you've got to go to school for 3 years or 4 years, and you're going to have to pay $30,000, $40,000 a year in order to get this training. And that's not true either.
Mm-hmm.
I
mm-hmm.
give out for free to anyone who asks them energy healing instructions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're the same energy healing instructions that were able to cure my sister of her serious disease. And the thing is anyone can do them for themselves. I mean, I'm happy to help coach people to wellness. A lot of times we just don't know what that emotional cause is. I was working with one lady, and she was actually a referral from my acupuncturist. And she said, I can't sit down. She says, I'm afraid if I sit down, I will die. And so just by getting out of my own way and looking for guidance, all of a sudden I found myself as her in Auschwitz, you know, one of the concentration camps. So I talked with her and talked her through with what I was seeing and feeling. And from that past life, she had brought forward this issue. And the issue was, if you sit down, they will think you are dead, and they will cart you off, and you will die. And this horrible feeling of not ever being able to sit down and relax is completely gone in this woman now. She's totally fine. She doesn't have that issue anymore. Because we were able to talk through it and realize that even though she had this past life trauma, she did live through it and she was saved. So sometimes people just don't realize how impactful even a past life issue can be on this life.
Right. Well, one thing that's great, too, is that an energy healer then should be able to identify all of these different aspects, because otherwise you have to go to a doctor that looks at the physical, and then you got to go to the psychiatrist that looks at the emotional, and you've got to look at all these different people, because medicine has become so specialized and so fractionized that you don't have someone looking at the whole anymore.
Right. Well, and I actually wanted to figure out why that is the way it is. And I went all the way back to, I guess it was like the 1500s, and Descartes wanted to be able to dissect bodies, but he didn't want to overstep his bounds with the church. And so he told the church, I'm only going to look at the physical. And that's really why medicine became so separated out. You know, that's why we've never treated the whole body. And you can't treat just part of the body. It has to be, holistic medicine is the only way to go. I mean, and I think of, you know, what I do, that I'll go to the chiropractor if I feel like my back is out. And if I have a specific problem, I'm going to go and have acupuncture done. And if I get a serious virus, I'm going to go and get antibiotics. Not a virus, it's, you know, bacteria. But at the same time, I'm doing energy healing too. You know, I got the crud that was going around, and I tell you, I can't remember the last time I'd been sick, because I can go years and years without even getting a cold. And I got bad news on the day that I was exposed. And so I got, you know, I got sick. I had bad news on my horse. And it was very upsetting. So, you know, if you're emotionally vulnerable, you're going to get sick.
I thank you for joining me today. I invite you to my websites, holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all of the previous shows for the last 6 years under the blog. You'll find information on books that I have written, ebooks, and soft cover books. On my second website, beatlungcancer.net, you will find most of the shows that I have been interviewed on to discuss the natural interventions that I used when I had lung cancer 40 years ago. You will also find that book for sale if interested. I also invite you to join me on Facebook under my name, or under Beat Lung Cancer or Holistic Health Show. I invite you to join me on LinkedIn under my name, Carl Helvey. And I also invite you to join me on Twitter under Holist Health Show. I hope you have a great week, and I look forward to seeing you again next time. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host.